Perhaps one of the great ironies of the future will be the Soulcoin alliance between urbane Terrans and hillbilly belters. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, and we are continuing our science fiction thought experiment series. This is, I love these pieces. I don't know why, it just is great. We get to go down the super science fiction rabbit hole here, thinking about the Bitcoin dynamics at a solar and even galactic scale. Can multiple chains coexist? How do we reach a Type 2 society and build Type 2 structures? And what money will be used to colonize distant stars? So this is the second piece in Dhruv Bansal's Bitcoin Astronomy series. This is from the Unchained Capital blog. Hopefully you listened to yesterday's episode all about the law of hash horizons. We're getting into the second law of Bitcoin astronomy here today. Don't forget to follow Dhruv and check out the blog at unchainedcapital.com. I think just /blog. Unchained-capital, actually. But he has some wonderful illustrations over there to go with this piece. A quick thank you to our lovely sponsors. We have the mobile banking services, Bitcoin banking services, with Level.co for those who are ready to live entirely off of Bitcoin, or even if you just want to speculate a little or do half of your finances and, you know, are sick of paying exchange fees, check out Level at guyswan.com/level, LVL. So then, of course, you have to hold your own keys. If you're a real Bitcoiner, especially if you don't know who's going to be winning the war in the Musk coin revolution, you really need a secure, independent, and open source means to store your keys. And that is the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that it's like super easy to, you know, even Martians, those idiots can set this thing up. So check them out at guyswan.com/bitbox. But without further ado, we're going to jump right into this read. It's a long one, but it's so good. And it's titled Bitcoin Astronomy Part 2 by Dhruv Bansal. This is part two in a series of speculations about the hyper-Bitcoinized future. In part one, we defined the first law of Bitcoin astronomy and described how it incentivizes searching for energy to power our growing civilization. In this part, we continue to follow the energy and speculate about how money and society co-evolve as humanity expands through space. We begin with a brief review of Part 1. First Law 101. In Part 1, we speculated about a hyper-Bitcoinized humanity, where Bitcoin has become much more than just a currency or even a global financial system. In the future, Bitcoin is deeply integrated into energy, telecommunications, logistics, and other sectors of Earth's economy. Secondary and tertiary layers of networks settling into Bitcoin are how markets, supply chains, and political systems organize themselves. The center of hash, the average spatial location of a blockchain's miners, weighted by their hash rate. Humanity is also beginning to settle other planets, such as Mars. This led us to explore how Bitcoin works when great distances separate users and miners. We introduced the idea of a center of hash above and explained how it leads to the first law of Bitcoin astronomy. Proof of work mining is not feasible far from the center of hash of a blockchain. All of a blockchain's miners must be co-located within the same hash horizon, a spatial sphere with a diameter comparable to the distance light can travel within that blockchain's block time. Bitcoin's choice of a 10-minute block time places Mars, at an average distance of 12 light minutes, outside of Earth's hash horizon. Martians will be able to use Bitcoin, but never mine it. Mining is one of the most important industries of the hyper-Bitcoinized future, It's not just about capturing transaction settlement fees. The ability for anyone to turn energy directly into money incentivizes broader collection of energy and optimizes its distribution. Eager to kickstart this virtuous cycle and a wave of financial speculation, distant colonies will launch their own Bitcoin-like blockchains. We followed the launch of Muskcoin, the first of these blockchains on the planet Mars. The launch of Muskcoin is a kind of economic and political revolution. Terran miners will not support it, preferring to keep Martian transaction fees accumulating on Earth. The first law of Bitcoin astronomy is the reason Martians launch Muskcoin, but it will also be why Muskcoin survives. Terran miners are too far away from Muskcoin's center of hash to prevent it from becoming the new currency of the Red Planet. This pattern of expansion and revolution will repeat throughout the future. As great distances divide our civilization, the first law ensures that those on the fringes will have both the incentive and the capability to launch their own blockchains. These pioneers will settle the outer planets and eventually nearby stars simply because they are far away. Kardashev civilizations. Before we continue our speculations, it will be useful to introduce some terminology for describing civilizations by their energy usage. Nikola Kardashev's famous scale categorizes civilizations as follows. A Type 1 civilization uses energy on a planetary scale, roughly 10 to the 17th power in watts. A Type 2 civilization uses energy on a stellar scale, roughly 10 to the 26th power in watts. A Type 3 civilization uses energy on a galactic scale, roughly 10 to the 37th watts. This scale is not precise and is more than a little arbitrary, but it does capture the vast gulf in energy usage between civilizations of different types. A Type 2 stellar civilization, for example, uses billions of times more energy than a Type 1 planetary civilization. The three original categories have since been extended, Type 4, Type 5, etc., and interpolated. A Type 2.1 civilization, for example, would use more energy than a Type 2 stellar civilization, but less than a Type 3 galactic civilization. Science fiction frequently describes fantastic mega-projects of advanced civilizations, such as space elevators and Dyson spheres, but it seldom articulates how they pay for it all. How can money develop the reach to coordinate society across solar systems and galaxies? What size market is required to settle the sale of a star system? Which reserve currency would an immortal future investor choose to hold? These questions are ignored by most science fiction writers who view money as either uninteresting because it's just like today's, or irrelevant because the future is post-scarcity. Quote, "If your theory is found to be against the second law of thermodynamics, I can give you no hope. There is nothing for it but to collapse in deepest humiliation." Sir Arthur Eddington. We believe that the laws of thermodynamics are inviolable. Energy will always be scarce, and using it will always create entropy through waste heat. The only quantity in the universe with infinite supply is human ambition. No future society will therefore ever be post-scarcity. For humanity, this means money and markets, and therefore blockchains, will always be useful for optimizing resource collection, distribution, and allocation. Kardashev blockchains. We believe money will scale with society's energy usage. Today, at the dawn of Bitcoin, we are, by some measures, a type 0.7, quote, subplanetary civilization. By the time of the Musk coin revolution, our burgeoning interplanetary civilization will have risen to somewhere between type 1 and type 2 on the Kardashev scale, though much closer to type 1. As we continue towards becoming a type 2 civilization, we will outgrow type 1, quote, planetary blockchains, such as Bitcoin or Muskcoin. We will still value these currencies, but we will forge a new, stellar blockchain to span our entire solar system. We will call this Type 2 blockchain Solcoin, as it will come to be used for most trade occurring in orbit of the star Sol, our sun. But money doesn't just scale in response to society's energy usage, it causes it. Blockchains of higher type bootstrap civilizations of lower type up the Kardashev scale. Bitcoin was a Type 1 blockchain built by a Type 0.7 civilization. It incentivized energy collection near the Earth, propelling us up into orbit and out into the solar system towards becoming a Type 1 civilization. Solcoin is a Type 2 blockchain built by a Type 1.x civilization. It will incentivize energy collection across the entire solar system, powering megastructures and interstellar missions, enabling our species to expand through our galactic neighborhood. When humanity eventually reaches other stars, we will launch blockchains there too, first planetary, then stellar. Our eventual Type 2.x interstellar society will launch Type 3 galactic blockchains. This positive feedback between expanding societies and new blockchains will repeat at even larger scales, determined by the distribution of matter in the universe. We'll begin our story with the origin of Solcoin on the once great planet of Earth, sometime after the Musk coin revolution. Type 1 civilizations launch Type 2 blockchains. The Musk coin revolution was a shock to many Terrans. Earth was the oldest, most populated, and most developed world, and the hash rate of Terran miners was tremendous. Yet Mars, a small colony that would have failed without continued investment and nourishment of Earth, successfully revolted against Bitcoin. The crucial factor in the success of this revolution was the Martians' choice of a block time short enough to place Earth outside of Muscoin's hash horizon, preventing Terran miners from mining Muscoin. Had Martians chosen to endow Muscoin with a block time of several hours, Earth would have been within Muscoin's hash horizon. The massively larger Terran hash rate would have outcompeted Martian miners, allowing them to hash bomb Muscoin, destroying it and the revolution without any shots fired. Short block times are a form of economic protectionism enabled by the finite speed of light. Martians and other potential revolutionaries intuitively understand this relationship. Short block times allow fledgling blockchains to defend themselves against the predations of powerful incumbents. Long block times not only make secondary and tertiary layers of the blockchain-based economy more challenging to engineer, they also cede power to faraway interests. No revolution would be so foolish as to start a blockchain with a long block time. The decline and fall of the Terran Empire. What about an empire? Like the American Revolution centuries prior, the Musk coin revolution became a model for other colonies seeking independence from Terran economic and political control. Powerful interests on Earth, like the British Empire before them, are faced with the prospect of continually diminishing influence as faraway colonies grow and, inspired by the example of Mars, demand their independence. Clever Terrans will realize that a blockchain with a long block time may be exactly what is needed to curtail future revolutions. Martians used Bitcoin on Mars for many years before they launched Muscoin. It was the inability to mine Bitcoin and the absence of the virtuous cycle of mining that prompted the revolution. Most of the solar system's mass is within a light day of Earth. If Terrans were to launch a blockchain with a block time of several days, its hash horizon would encompass all miners in the entire solar system. This will lead them to suggest Solcoin, the first Type 2 stellar blockchain. Terrans hope Solcoin will transform potential colonial revolutionaries into productive miners, all hashing together within a single solar system-wide market. A single money, they'll argue, is more efficient than many separate monies. They'll advocate for citizens of faraway colonies to use Type 1 planetary blockchains, such as Bitcoin, for their daily transactions, but mine Soulcoin for the health of their economies. Such an arrangement would be of great benefit to the Terran miners. Large distances and short block times cut off their tremendous hash rate, largest in the solar system, from the fee markets of blockchains such as Muskcoin. Soulcoin is an interplanetary fee market that all miners in the solar system can compete in. Since Terrans have the highest hash rate, they would dominate this market, capturing settlement fees that currently go to miners of other blockchains.
Soulcoiners are selling their hash rate to Interplanetary Society. And you know, there's no such thing as Interplanetary Society. There are individual planets and moons, and there are asteroids.
Stargarit Hasher, 2187. This point will not be lost on the governments, businesses, and people living far from Earth already using or contemplating their own planetary blockchains. Local mining industries solar system-wide will balk at opening themselves up to competition with Terran miners, in the same way that domestic manufacturers balk at lowering tariffs on foreign imports. Detractors will argue that Soulcoin is merely a ploy by perfidious Terran miners to interfere in the money and politics of the other worlds, a sign of an empire in decline, unwilling to gracefully cede interplanetary space to those who dwell there. A million tiny worlds. But Terran miners won't be the only Soulcoin supporters. To find others, we must turn our attention to the literal fringes of interplanetary society. Not all humans will choose to live on or near planetary bodies. Many will prefer to take up residence in engineered space habitats that offer the most Earth-like living conditions away from the hustle and grime of Earth itself. Spinning cylinders can provide Earth-equivalent gravity, which is much more difficult to produce on the surface of Mars or the Moon. Fusion lamps powered by water can provide Earth-natural sunlight. Space habitats can thrive anywhere. Some may even migrate. These habitats will first be built in orbit near the Earth, Moon, and Mars, and then at nearby Lagrange points. But hauling large amounts of material up from a planet's surface is inefficient and expensive. Later habitats will be built where the materials to make them are abundant and where there is no gravity well to fight. The asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, and the belt of comets beyond the orbit of Neptune, known as the Kuiper Belt, of which Pluto is the most prominent member. Asteroids and comets are made out of carbon, silicon, metals, ammonia, methane, and water, all raw ingredients of the space industry. They are the perfect substrate for building colonies. The belts will become full with them. It is possible that belters on opposite sides of the solar system feel no mutual relation, but it's also possible that the belters will have their own cultural identity and economic network full of people with a shared history and similar problems. Belters will want to unite behind a blockchain they can all mine, pulling the virtuous cycle of mining into their orbit. But a settled belt is very different from a planet. A single space colony may house a few million people, about the scale of a large city. The billions of humans eventually settling the asteroid and Kuiper belts will be spread across hundreds and then thousands of such colonies. At first, the colonies may be near each other, but over time, they will distribute around the full circumference of the belts. If belters were to start a blockchain, what block time should they use? Graphic. Belts are extended objects which span significant distances in space. The asteroid belt on the left, between Mars and Jupiter, is about a light hour in diameter. The Kuiper belt on the right, beyond the orbit of Neptune, is a full light day in diameter. Type 1 blockchains with block times of minutes can be used by belters but will never be mined by them. The huge amounts of energy available in the belts will only be harnessed by a Type 2 blockchain, with a block time comparable to, or more likely, many times, their diameter. Planetary blockchains such as Bitcoin and Muskcoin have short block times of about 10 minutes and correspondingly small hash horizons. This is sufficient for civilizations such as Earth's or Mars, which are located near planets and span just a few light seconds. If, like these planetary blockchains, belters choose a convenient time near 10 minutes, then their hash horizons will be similarly small. asteroids in the asteroid belt aren't a dangerous minefield of obstacles, as often depicted in movies. In reality, asteroids are about 3 light seconds apart on average, more than twice as far apart as the Earth and the Moon. Comets in the Kuiper belt are even further apart. A blockchain with a small hash horizon will therefore only be able to connect miners on a few nearby colonies. A small number of nearby colonies is like a small number of nearby cities. They will not have the population, industry, or hash rate to support an entire blockchain, let alone one that could defend itself against aggression from nearby planetary blockchains. But the population of the full belt, hashing together, could hold against the center. The geography, or perhaps the topology, of their society presents some immediate challenges. A belt is not localized near any single point. It is an annulus of material surrounding the Sun. The diameter of the asteroid belt is larger than the orbit of Mars. Signals take almost a full hour to cross it. The Kuiper belt is even larger in diameter, a full light day. A blockchain that can connect all of these far-flung miners would need an extremely long block time. This is exactly the problem a stellar blockchain such as SolCoin solves. Without SolCoin, belters could transact using any number of local planetary blockchains, but they would never be able to start the virtuous cycle of mining. With SolCoin, belters can spin up mining rigs anywhere they find energy to harvest and hope to earn transaction fees from solar system-wide trade. Perhaps one of the great ironies of the future will be the SolCoin alliance between urbane Terrans and hillbilly belters. Type 1 and Type 2 blockchains are different. Though they work on the same principles, the vast difference in scale between stellar Type 2 and planetary Type 1 blockchains doesn't just make SolCoin bigger, it makes it different. Confirmation times are long. To allow mining across the solar system, SolCoin must have a hash horizon that is 1 to 2 light days wide. But this does not necessarily mean the block time should be equal to 1 or 2 days. It only takes a few seconds for a signal to traverse the entire Earth's network infrastructure, yet the Bitcoin block time is 10 minutes, which is hundreds of times longer. The unpredictability of proof of work means that block times have irreducible statistical variance. A blockchain targeting a block time of 10 minutes will occasionally have blocks just a few minutes or even seconds apart. The block time needs to be long enough that the network has enough time to integrate over the current fee market in the mempool, as well as source enough hash rate to defend against adversarial attempts to reorg the chain. Block times should be at least several times the signal traversal time between the most distant miners. If we naively scaled up the numbers, a signal traversal time of 1 to 2 days across the settled solar system suggests a block time of several hundred days. Linear scaling may be too conservative. It's possible that as signal traversal times increase, the ideal multiple for block time may decrease. We might be less conservative and suggest a block time as short as 7 to 30 days, between a Terran standard week and month. But even in this optimistic case, a single SolCoin transaction could take months to confirm. Issuance is slow. If SolCoin's monetary policy is comparable to Bitcoin's, fixed cap, block subsidy, and halvings, then the long block time implies a correspondingly slow issuance schedule. Assuming the halving period is kept at 210,000 blocks instead of every 4 years, 7 to 30 day blocks would imply that halvings occur every 4,000 to 17,000 years. Bitcoin is scheduled to produce its predetermined supply of 21 million Bitcoin within 140 years of launch. With 7 to 30 day blocks, SolCoin would take 140,000 to 600,000 years to do the same. These are longer timescales than humanity has ever considered. Longer, perhaps, than the history of our species itself. SolCoin's issuance could be accelerated by restricting its scale and space. If the poor denizens of the Kuiper belt can be excluded, then the required hash horizon of SolCoin can be reduced to, say, the diameter of Neptune's orbit, a mere 8 light hours. This would enable a correspondingly shorter block time, which leads to more frequent halvings. Alternatively, Solcoin could retain its desired scale in space and the corresponding 7 to 30 day block time, but simply reduce the number of blocks between each halvings from 210,000 to perhaps as low as 10,000. This still yields 180 to 800 years between halvings, and 6,600 to 29,000 years to produce the Solcoin supply. It seems that regardless of what numbers we use, if we want Solcoin mining to be possible over an appreciable fraction of our solar system, then we are forced to think at very long timescales. Difficulty and hash rate are high. As a stellar blockchain, Solcoin's miners should not be concentrated too densely near any particular planet or colony. This means the difficulty of Solcoin blocks has to be extremely high. During the early days of Solcoin's launch, when hash rate is low, if minimum difficulty were also low, then it would be possible for miners who command significant hash rate in one location, a single planet, to mine blocks faster than they can be transmitted through the network, 1 to 2 days. If more than one miner or pool did this, it would destabilize consensus. Difficulty should therefore be high enough that even if a significant percentage of some planet's hash rate chooses to mine Solcoin, it would be insufficient to consistently win them blocks. One strategy Solcoin might use to rebuff attacks from miners of planetary blockchains during its infancy is to use a unique mining algorithm. While this may initially work, it's also possible that future advances make printing custom ASICs trivial. The surer defense is to simply set a high difficulty and not launch Solcoin until sufficient hash rate exists to operate it. Using the same mining algorithm as planetary blockchains may also be a way to encourage adoption. To stabilize payouts in the face of such high difficulties and long block times, Solcoin miners would be forced to create and join mining pools distributed across the solar system. Note, even if Solcoin hash rate grows to exceed that of planetary blockchains, by the first law, distributed Solcoin mining pools cannot coordinate to attack planetary blockchains, as most of their members would be outside a planetary blockchain's hash horizon. Energy usage and price are astronomical. Because of its high difficulty, the proof of work in a single Solcoin block will eventually represent more energy than that used by whole planets. Solcoin isn't just a stellar blockchain in physical diameter, it's also a stellar blockchain in energy scale. We'll return to this point below. For mining to make economic sense, Solcoins must therefore become extremely valuable in planetary currency. This hypothesis will fuel much early speculation in the Solcoin price, but speculators alone aren't sufficient to sustain a gargantuan project such as Solcoin. If Solcoin is to succeed, it must be broadly accepted by interplanetary society. Given that Solcoin's price and pace rule out many kinds of economic activity, what exactly would people use it for? Why would people, outside of greedy Terrans and poor belters, want to hold Solcoin? Type 1 and 2 civilizations are different. Type 2 civilizations are as different from Type 1 civilizations as Type 2 blockchains are from Type 1 blockchains. As a Type 1 civilization evolves into a Type 2, it experiences structural changes paralleled by its money. Both become lower time preference, have longer investment horizons, and increased energy requirements. Civilizations and blockchains co-evolve together. Let's explore some of the ways Type 1 and Type 2 civilizations differ, and in doing so, understand why a Type 2 civilization will find a Type 2 blockchain such as Solcoin valuable. Culture is low time preference. Like today's time zone differences, the myriad day and night cycles across the solar system will make coordinating simultaneous interplanetary activities more difficult. But unlike communicating across time zones, interplanetary communication is asynchronous. When you call someone on the opposite side of the world, it may be an inconvenient time for them,
but your conversation starts instantly and occurs in real time. You don't call someone on a different planet at all. You send them recorded messages which they receive hours later. This is an unavoidable limitation of communication imposed upon all future civilizations by the finite speed of light. Asynchronous communication is already commonplace in our world today. Everyone emails, texts, and messages on social platforms, but live connections are important to us. Remote work and relationships are maintained through the ease of getting, quote, online. Witness the massive increase in video chat applications during the 2020 pandemic. When major parts of our civilization are incapable of live communication, the future begins to resemble the past, a slower-paced society of letters and telegrams. But the future will also resemble no time before it. Technology, whether through medicine, computing, or both, will significantly extend human lifespans. A life expectancy of hundreds or even thousands of years may become commonplace. Long-lived, asynchronously communicating people will have a different relationship to time than humans of today. The cumulative effect of these changing temporal relationships across society, even if life extension is somewhat rare, could be profound. Patience, planning, and low time preference, at least compared to today's business cycles, may become the norm. For a person who expects to live for 10,000 years and is accustomed to casual conversations bridging hours and days of light lag, the slowness of SoulCoin may be unremarkable. Waiting 3 months for a SoulCoin transaction to confirm may feel normal, just like waiting an hour for a Bitcoin transaction to confirm feels normal today. Waiting a century for a time-locked SoulCoin contract to activate would be like waiting just a year today for long-term capital gains to kick in. SoulCoin's pace increasingly matches the time preference of its era. Transportation is slow. Modern transportation networks make our world feel small. Voyages between distant worlds will take months and be expensive. This will cause interplanetary travel to become highly stratified by time preference. Transporting people or vital supplies will be done along direct, extremely expensive minimum time routes, which will still take weeks to months, depending on the distance. But most goods will be shipped along slower, cheaper minimum energy routes, which, like the seasonal oceanic shipping routes of the past, are only sporadically available, varying with the positions of the planets in their orbits. The Hallmann transfer from Earth to Mars, for example, is one of the most energy-efficient routes between those planets, but takes 9 months to complete and only presents a launch window every 24 months. Martian businesses may become accustomed to waiting up to 3 years for the next cheap delivery window from Earth. There are even more energy-efficient trajectories between worlds, utilizing the interplanetary transport network, that take decades or centuries. These routes are usually ignored as too long to be practical, but they may be appropriate for transporting huge amounts of mass, such as whole asteroids and comets. A significant source of revenue for belters may be the export of such objects from their home orbit to the rest of the solar system. The cheapest way to ship a 5-mile diameter water-rich comet to your Jovian orbital factory might be to pay upfront in SoulCoin and wait 75 years. Investment horizons are long. Longer lives don't just mean that we can be more patient with SoulCoin transactions. They change the way we invest and our risk and return tolerance. If you plan to live for 10,000 years, how would you store and preserve your wealth? Wealth preservation is all about risk management, and the future, on a long enough timescale, is a dangerous place. You might not worry today about a catastrophic black swan event with 1% chance of occurring per century, but if you lived for 10,000 years, the probability of that same event occurring at least once approaches 2 in 3. Given enough time, natural accidents like extraterrestrial impacts, solar flares, or supervolcanoes will manifest somewhere, sometime. And given our bellicose history, it's unlikely that future societies expanding and competing for the solar system's resources will always remain at peace. Total war in a high-energy future society could mean the destruction of an entire planet and its blockchain along with it. Even if the conflict doesn't escalate to such a destructive level, if Earth and Mars were to go to war, could either Bitcoin or Musk coin be considered neutral money? Would Bitcoin miners, united by their common location on Earth, to view Mars as an enemy, choose, or be politically compelled, to censor the transactions of known Martian entities? This possibility was one of the instigating causes of the Muskcoin revolution, after all. If you're a rich Martian pondering going into cryostasis for 1,000 years as you await the development of your investments, you may worry about these kinds of unforeseen political conflicts. Long-time Horizon investors today use real estate or commodities such as gold, oil, precious metals, and increasingly, Bitcoin, to hedge exposure to geopolitical risk. What assets would long-time Horizon investors of the future use to hedge their exposure to heliopolitical risk? Planetary blockchains are, by definition, localized to a given planet, and are therefore inseparable from the heliopolitical risks of that planet. Investors of the future can attempt to hedge this risk by holding a portfolio of planetary blockchains and rebalancing it over the centuries, or they may invest in commodities, though their choices would be different. Example, hydrogen instead of petroleum. By distributing consensus throughout the whole solar system, a stellar blockchain such as SolCoin provides exactly the asset that long-time Horizon investors are looking for. They view SolCoin's long block times and tremendous hash rates as features, not bugs. SolCoin is a heliopolitically neutral, low-risk money for long-term capital preservation. This will not be apparent to elites when SolCoin first launches. Quote, serious money managers will not initially consider SolCoin a real asset class, but significant appreciation over some decades or centuries may convince them that SolCoin has superior properties as a store of wealth compared to any planetary blockchain due to its greater robustness against local threats, natural or political. Eventually, SolCoin will be held by everyone, whether directly or through some future equivalent of an index fund. Energy scales are increasing. All right, let's take a quick break. I need something to drink, and we will be right back on this section. Level.co, LVL.co. Who are these guys? Maybe you've heard of them. They are a no-fee exchange. They have a freemium model. That's right. Even though I don't personally recommend trading, I know there's a lot of degenerates out there who like to play that game. And if you don't want to get eat up by fees, Level.co is the only option. But some of you actually just want to live entirely in Bitcoin. You just want to get away from fiat altogether. This is how you do it. They are a full mobile banking service. You can convert to dollars on the fly, again with no fees. You get direct deposit, do your Level account. You get ACH and wire transfers, and you get a debit card. And again, this is the freemium version. You literally only pay a small fee for a withdrawal. With the premium, that costs just $9 a month, which is basically a coffee if you're going to get it with coconut milk, 2 extra shots, and 4 pumps of vanilla syrup, you get even more. A world debit card, autopilot trading, and chat with a personal banker. They are available on both Android and Apple in 28 states and counting, hoping to be with 94% of the U.S. population by the end of 2021. Check them out at guyswan.com/level. Energy scales are increasing. Science fiction often depicts interplanetary societies launching interstellar missions or constructing megastructures such as ring worlds, Dyson spheres or swarms, and Shkadov thrusters, but seldom describes how such projects are funded. Mega projects will be the most expensive and largest collaborations in the history of our species, consuming more energy than entire planetary societies. They will take thousands of years to complete, which means thousands of years of paying designers, suppliers, and builders from Mercury to the Kuiper Belt. What currency will these people and companies demand? Soulcoin, of course. Soulcoin's heliopolitical neutrality makes it a natural fit for funding mega projects. Contractors and investors across the solar system feel more comfortable relying on a neutral Soulcoin rather than a possibly partisan planetary blockchain such as Bitcoin. Soulcoin's timescale also matches that of mega projects themselves, allowing their supporters to manage the risk of such a large investment over such a long time period. But there is an ever deeper connection between Type 2 blockchains and mega projects. They both operate at the same tremendously high energy scales. Consider the classic example of a Dyson sphere. The amount of energy required to reconfigure enough matter to blot out a star, by definition, puts such a project in the Type 2 category. Why would humanity choose to build such a megastructure or use so much energy? A Dyson sphere can support not trillions of people, but trillions of Earths worth of people. Simple population expansion and uninhibited consumerism alone may not be enough to generate demand for so much energy. But there are other drivers for energy consumption. Fundamental research and interstellar missions will also require energy scales beyond a single planet. If humanity is ever to experiment on black holes or settle another star, we will require the energy budget of a Type 2 civilization, even if we never build a Dyson sphere. This requires creating an economic incentive to collect energy across the whole solar system. Type 1 blockchains don't provide this incentive. It's true that concentrations of energy far from existing centers of hash will attract settlers, grow civilizations, and start their own blockchains, incentivizing energy collection in the vicinity of that planet, moon, or colony. But these Type 1 blockchains will not be able to incentivize the collection of energy outside their limited hash horizons. Gathering the vast energy in the comets of the Kuiper Belt or from the light our sun streams out into every direction in space requires incentivizing energy collection at every point in our solar system. This is exactly what a Type 2 blockchain such as Soulcoin does. Soulcoin's broad hash horizon means that a miner can reliably turn harvestable energy anywhere in the solar system into profit without having to first transport it close to a planetary blockchain center of hash. Like Bitcoin before it on Earth, Soulcoin's hash rate market is a ratchet which cranks society into ever higher tiers of energy production. Turning this relationship around, we also see why it's vital for a Type 2 civilization to use a Type 2 blockchain. Type 2 civilizations use billions of times more energy than Type 1 civilizations, and consequently, than Type 1 blockchains. If even a small fraction of this energy were concentrated in one spatial location and turned into hash rate, it could destabilize a local Type 1 blockchain, just like a hash bomb during the Musk coin revolution. Only a Type 2 blockchain operates at energy scales high enough to defend against such attacks. Type 2 blockchains won't displace Type 1. One of the earliest lessons of hyperbitcoinization was that only one blockchain, one sound money, can exist. All other monies fail or are subsumed by Bitcoin-denominated trade. The successful launches of Muskcoin and other planetary blockchains was another lesson. Multiple blockchains, multiple sound monies, can coexist, but only if they're far enough away from each other in space. Soulcoin claims to be a blockchain that is close to everyone. Its hash horizon spans the solar system. If there can only be one sound money in one place at one time, doesn't the success of Soulcoin require it to displace all planetary blockchains? Demand exists across time preferences. Some Soulcoin maximalists will believe this, and will therefore view all planetary blockchains as competitive and their supporters as enemies of Soulcoin. But the truth is more nuanced. As we've seen, Type 2 blockchains such as Soulcoin are extremely different from Type 1 blockchains. They're not just larger, they're also slower, use more energy, and are much more valuable. The difference in scale segregates economic activity by time preference.
Solcoin is designed for long timescale, high energy, cross solar system trade and projects. Planetary blockchains cannot support these use cases, which is the source of the low time preference demand for Solcoin in the first place. But economic activity at the scale of planets will mostly continue to use planetary blockchains. In a hyper-Bitcoinized economy, only the largest transactions are directly put on the blockchain anyway. Planetary economies are already organized in layers, which settle to their local blockchain. Solcoin may come to be used for a small percentage of the most valuable planetary transactions, but most will continue to use planetary currency. Purchasing the quintessential space coffee will still be done using some higher layer payment network settling through the local planetary blockchain. Higher layer networks settling to Solcoin will also arise. These layers will allow for faster Solcoin transactions, but just as they do for planetary blockchains. But these layers won't be able to bridge the gap between the Solcoin block time and the pace of daily life. Opening and closing channels still requires waiting for blocks to confirm, which could take months in Solcoin. Solcoin is just too slow for most kinds of local trade. This means there will always be some demand for the tokens and hash rate of planetary blockchains. Even if you or your company prefers to operate at the ethereal scale of Solcoin, the vendors you buy from or the workers you hire may have different time preferences than you. Over time, an increasing fraction of economic value and system-wide hash rate may gravitate to Solcoin, but planetary blockchains will survive where they can. Type 2 civilizations don't displace Type 1 civilizations. They contain them. Similarly, Type 2 blockchains don't displace Type 1 blockchains. They contain them. Portfolio management at the Kardashev scale. One of the important roles of any blockchain is to provide a long-term store of value. Solcoin is designed to be a better store of value than any planetary blockchain, so some amount of savings will transfer from planetary blockchains to Solcoin. Investors will decide how much of their portfolio to store in planetary blockchains. They may decide to hold more than one. And how much to store in Solcoin based on their time preference and their heliopolitical concerns. The longer the time horizon of an investor, the more likely they are to hold their wealth in Solcoin. But the need to make investments or purchases on a planetary scale will always ensure some demand for holding planetary blockchains. As a result, miners will have to decide how much hash rate to invest into their local planetary blockchain, Bitcoin, Muscoin, etc., versus how much to invest in Solcoin. The ratio each miner chooses between these two hash rates balances their beliefs about the current hash rate markets, future price movement between Solcoin and their local currency, as well as their own time preference. Miners who value immediate returns will put more hash rate towards their planetary blockchain. Those who could afford to be lower time preference would put more hash rate towards Solcoin. If too many miners in one location are hashing Solcoin, it should create an incentive for others to begin hashing on their local planetary blockchain, and vice versa. To a first approximation, the ratio of hash rate a miner dedicates to their own planetary blockchain versus to Solcoin should equal the overall hash rate ratio between that planetary blockchain and Solcoin. Towards a second law. Type 1 and Type 2 blockchains can overlap in space because the market segregates their usage by time. A physical analogy may help visualize the situation as well as provide some useful terminology. Interference. Waves are self-sustaining oscillations that contain or transport energy. Waves are characterized by several parameters such as frequency, wavelength, amplitude, etc. These parameters are constrained. Lower the frequency and the wavelength increases, while the energy decreases. Interactions between waves can be very rich. When waves have different frequencies or wavelengths, they can overlap in space. One wave will pass through another without either being disturbed. When waves have similar frequencies and wavelengths, they can interact strongly, exhibiting constructive or deconstructive interference. Blockchains aren't waves, but they are self-sustaining. They contain energy, and they're characterized by constrained parameters.
Instead of a frequency, a blockchain has a block time. Instead of a wavelength, it has a hash horizon. Lower the frequency, block time, and the wavelength, hash horizon, increases due to the first law. Interestingly, as we saw above, lowering the frequency increases the energy. Soulcoin uses much more energy than a planetary blockchain. We can use this analogy to talk about blockchains in a new way. Two blockchains with very different frequencies and wavelengths, block times and hash horizons, such as Soulcoin and Bitcoin, can overlap. They don't economically interfere with each other because they operate at such different timescales. The market can support both blockchains for their different use cases. Two blockchains of similar frequency or wavelength, block time and hash horizon, cannot overlap. They economically interfere with each other. Miners and users will inevitably pick one of them. This is why altcoins died out while Bitcoin survived. Blockchains of a similar frequency or wavelength must be widely separated, such as Bitcoin and Muskcoin, decoupling their mining markets through the first law. Summarizing, blockchains can coexist if they are widely separated in physical space or in frequency space, block time. Type 1 blockchains have similar block times but are far apart in space. Type 1 and Type 2 blockchains overlap in space but are far apart in frequency space, the block time. Resonance. But exactly how widely separated must blockchains be? This is another way waves provide a good analogy. Waves in free space, called traveling waves, can have any wavelength. This is why you can see light in all colors, but waves interacting with matter will react to it. Most waves will bounce off or decay. Some waves, called standing waves or normal modes, are special. They can persist for long times, storing or absorbing energy. Normal modes have, quote, characteristic wavelengths and, quote, natural frequencies, which are determined by the geometry of the matter they interact with. Normal modes can also resonate, quickly absorbing energy input at their characteristic frequencies. This is why no matter how you ring a bell, bang a gong, or pluck a guitar string, within reason, the same tone emerges. Consider a blockchain with a block time of several hours designed to connect the inner planets, a type 1.3 blockchain, say. Its block time would be long enough to make Type 1 transactions expensive and inefficient, yet not long enough to provide Type 2 risk management capabilities. Its hash horizon would be smaller than a Type 2 blockchain, insufficient to include the outer planets and the belts, leaving them without a chain to mine on, disincentivizing the collection of energy from their orbits. Such an intermediate Type 1.x blockchain is an awkward partial solution. If blockchains are like waves, then Type 1 and Type 2 blockchains are normal modes. Their characteristic wavelengths and natural frequencies are determined by the distributions of matter they draw energy from, and the cultural timescales of the civilizations they power. Type 1 and 2 blockchains are shelling points, resonating with the market, allowing a small group of initial supporters and low hash rate to excite a self-sustaining money that absorbs energy and value. A Type 1 blockchain resonates with a 10-minute frequency around a planet or a colony and is used for daily transactions and global trade. A Type 2 blockchain resonates with a month-long frequency throughout a star system and is used for long-timescale capital preservation and high-energy investments, such as megaprojects. This is why we did not speculate about any blockchains intermediate in scale between Type 1 and Type 2. We hypothesize that intermediate blockchains, should they be launched, will not be shelling points. Far from resonance, they would decay away, surrendering their hash rate to either Type 1 or Type 2 neighbors. Exclusion. The two analogies of interference and resonance imply a third. Classical physics is usually continuous. Distinct energy or position states of matter can be arbitrarily close together. Quantum physics is usually discrete. Matter particles must occupy distinct states with different energies and/or positions. States are usually filled up by matter particles in order of increasing energy, outward from some source. This is known as the Pauli exclusion principle. Blockchains must resonate around matter distributions, planet or solar systems, and a cultural timescale, real-time or long-term, which means the set of allowable states for blockchains is discrete, not continuous. Blockchains in the same state, location, and block time economically interfere. Like matter particles, only a single blockchain can occupy a given state, and states are populated in order of increasing energy scale and distance from Earth. Type 1 before Type 2. Bitcoin before Muskcoin. We hypothesize blockchains, like matter, obey some economic version of an exclusion principle, which we promote as a second law. The second law of Bitcoin astronomy, the hash exclusion principle. Discrete physical and temporal scales provide hierarchical states for blockchains to occupy in order of increasing energy and distance from Earth. As humanity ascends the Kardashev scale, the second law describes how blockchains populate the matter our society has colonized and the timescales our culture can experience. Blockchains are a kind of economic dark matter, shadowing normal matter wherever civilization settles, invisible but detectable through the constant pressure they exert on energy markets and supply chains. Type 2 civilizations launch Type 3 blockchains. Following the implications of the second law, humanity, should we survive long enough, will eventually launch a Type 3 galactic blockchain. Such a heady notion requires us to first become a Type 2.x civilization, which in turn requires expanding to other stars. Interstellar missions are Type 2 megaprojects. Stars are extremely far apart. Today's fastest space probes will take hundreds of thousands of years to reach neighboring stars. Reducing the time frame of such voyages to centuries or decades will require ships to travel at substantial fractions of the speed of light. Our current generation of spacecraft are also uncrewed and no bigger than cars or small buses. An interstellar mission would require a massive ship capable of supporting a human crew and some complement of, perhaps, hibernating colonists and their supplies. More mass moving faster means the ship has more kinetic energy. The total amount of kinetic energy can be used to estimate the total cost of the mission. This estimate is an order of magnitude lower bound. Construction costs, inefficiencies, and many other considerations make an interstellar mission even more costly in reality. As a concrete example, consider a spaceship the size of a modern aircraft carrier moving at 10% the speed of light. Such a ship would still take a century to reach even the closest stars and would barely be big enough to keep its passengers alive en route, but no matter. The kinetic energy of this ship would be orders of magnitude larger than the current annual energy usage of our entire civilization. And that is just one ship. Launching many interstellar missions will use orders of magnitude more energy than even this. Interstellar settlement is the domain of Type 2 civilizations. Developing energy infrastructure on such a scale would require markets like Solcoin. If you believe humanity's destiny is to settle other star systems, then you would be a Solcoin supporter. The cycle repeats anew. Given the years it will take to send transactions, colonists of a remote star system will barely be able to use, much less mine, any Type 1 blockchain, such as Bitcoin, from our solar system. These colonists will therefore launch their own Type 1 blockchain to support the first colony at the new star. They may wait to start this blockchain until they arrive in the new system, but they may also start it en route, on the colony ship, or perhaps even prior to launch. As long as all the miners stay with the ship, travel together to the new star system while continuously hashing, the blockchain, like an ember in a fire bundle,
will survive the long, cold journey through interstellar space. Over thousands of years, the colony will grow, settling other planets of the remote star system, launching additional planetary blockchains. One day, there will be sufficient demand at the remote colony to launch its own Type 2 blockchain, receiving Genesis blocks from human colonies around other stars. Will make humans here in orbit around Sol feel the fierce pride of parents watching their children grow up. The cycle grows larger. As humanity grows from a Type 2 to a Type 3 civilization, the virtuous cycle will repeat itself on an even larger and more dizzying scale. Great chains have little chains within their hash horizons, and little chains have lesser chains, and so ad infinitum. Hymenoptera, from Michaelis de Sailors, A Blockchain of Paradoxes, 2194. Our stellar neighborhood will eventually host many Type 2 blockchains, from Solcoin to Centauri Coin, Sirius Coin, and others. The humans, though they may increasingly not resemble the humans of today, living in orbit of these faraway stars, will eventually seek to create the next blockchain on the Kardashev scale, a Type 3 galactic blockchain with a block time of thousands of years, designed to span our stellar diaspora the way Solcoin spans our solar system and Bitcoin or Musk coin span Earth or Mars. This galactic blockchain would harvest the energy of unsettled star systems, rogue planets, and interstellar gas clouds. It would have a hash rate larger than the total energy usage of entire Type 2 civilizations. Over millions of years, it would slowly mint its fixed supply of coins, blithely robust to the occasional nova or rogue black hole. Hodl on. Part 3. Beyond Humanity. So far, we have confined our speculation to the human species. But having come this far, there's no reason we should stop. Should other intelligent civilizations exist in our galaxy, will they also discover blockchains? Will their future societies resemble ours, organized into planetary, stellar, and galactic blockchains? Will blockchains of different species ever interact? If so, what will happen to our hyper-Bitcoinized future humans when they detect an indisputably intelligent extraterrestrial transmission which consists of block headers? If you enjoyed this article, stay tuned for part 3. Thank you. Thank you so much to my wonderful colleagues at Unchained Capital for having the patience to tolerate my speculations and for providing me a platform through which to publish them. Also to be thanked are my friends Brandon Hudgens. I think that's right. Brandon Quittam, Destry Saul, Joe Kelly, and Taylor Pearson, all of whom provided extended and valuable feedback on early drafts. Particular thanks are due to Martin Grogano, who makes everything he touches pretty, and Phil Geiger, whose enthusiasm is the second infinite resource in the universe. All right, that will conclude our article. It was a massive one, but I love this series. It's just so much fun to just... I'll throw this thought experiment around, right? One of the really coolest ideas or concepts, I think, in extrapolating this out that I had in this piece in particular, there's a quote actually. When major parts of our civilization are incapable of live communication, the future begins to resemble the past, a slower-paced society of letters and telegrams. So that's when he's talking about how, like, when we get to, if we got to a place where we're settling the Kuiper belts and, like, we're way out at the end, at the edges of the solar system, you know, communication takes hours, days to actually get back and forth. And that this is just, like, kind of a new horizon. And it's actually kind of a really cool mental map to how and why civilization scales in certain ways. Like if you kind of take just the mechanism of communication and apply it to all human and organism evolution, this is kind of a truism of all life, that the ability to communicate at a certain level and a certain speed is what allows or disallows life to cooperate at a certain level. So like take this all the way back down to like the chemical level, like single-celled organisms or whatever. When single-celled organisms finally developed a universal code to communicate with chemicals, they suddenly adopted the same code. They aggregated into multicellular organisms. Suddenly they could cooperate and work together. And then they basically created a new extension of that, and an additional external code at a higher layer to specialize parts of this multicellular organism into specific jobs. They created organs. They used that underlying universal chemical communication process to develop these new organs and these processes, and then become far larger and more complex organisms that were far more than just the whole of all of their individual cells. And then that organism, you know, can only communicate with its others through touch and body language at first. And then that's when, like, as humans or whatever, or as distant ancestors of humans, you stay isolated as individual families and maybe at most tribes. But then you create an external code that we can share in common, a language to communicate ideas and more information, to take the patterns that are happening in my brain, which actually just the idea of a mental system, of a mental abstraction of the world, is itself one of those new communication tools, to turn it into electrical signals that can freely connect and disconnect without having a chemical, or excuse me, without having a, I mean, it does have a chemical response, but it doesn't change the nature of our body. It's basically a mental playground to test out versions of reality so that we can communicate and we can test things on a higher level and in a far faster pace than actually having to do the actions and have evolution decide whether or not that action would kill us or not. Like, I can think about maybe it's really stupid to eat this berry without having to just eat the berry and see if I die and someone else doesn't eat the berry and they survive. So that alone is already an abstraction that allows us to communicate at a new layer, even within our own organism. But then that allows us to create the next layer again of communication, the next distance of communication, is that now if we have a common language that we can begin to coalesce into larger tribes, we can bridge the gaps to other families and tribes where we aren't immediately at odds. We can actually do long-term or large economic trade because we can build a trusted relationship with people who are outside our immediate community. But then we can go even further. That's when we have a tool like money. Now we can trust the money and get over the failure of a trust relationship. You know, trusted relationships don't scale past Dunbar's number. That, like, you know, 150, 200 people, it's the most number of relationships you can hold in your head without having it begin to break down and not know who relates to who and how, and therefore whose debt you can hold and how you can do business in a particular environment. Whereas if you can trust some universal means of defining value, an independent money, a gold, even a seashell in certain, you know, limited circumstances, that if you can trust the money and everybody universally trusts that external, that new layer of code, suddenly we can scale society to a whole nother level, because I don't have to know who I'm doing business with, because as long as I'm getting the money isn't subject to their trustworthiness. It's not an instrument of credit or reputation or knowing the actual person. It is a representation of value in and of itself. And that takes us from tribes and, you know, Dunbar's number up to city-states and countries and even a global society. And at every stage of this, it's a problem of communication. It's communication of some sort that prevents the next layer from being able to form, that prevents the next evolution from taking place. And when that communication is possible, all the barriers fall down. And that's why I think Bitcoin is it will have such a powerful effect on the world, because it destroys the creditworthiness issue of monetary goods. When governments are the source of money, when money isn't independent, it totally relies on the sustainability and the trustworthiness of the political system by which you get that money. So there will always be political divides. And thus, basically, the economic system cannot sufficiently or, sustainably span those political barriers. Those political barriers are economic barriers, too. But now with a global independent money that anybody can trust, regardless of the political system they're in, regardless of the religion or the ideology of the other party, you can actually scale to a global society, a real global society, and go to that next level, start actually producing and making agreements and projects on such a scale as to potentially reach across and, you know, begin to have enough prosperity and excess wealth to establish or colonize another planet. But that in doing so, we now run into the next problem. We're back to, we're thrown 1,000 years back in history where communication is incredibly slow, where there's days or months of travel to get from one place to the next. It's like, you know, it's just like crossing the ocean in the 15 and 1600s. Like you didn't plan on doing that and hopping right back over, you know, getting back in a plane and popping a Valium to wake up back at home. Like that didn't happen. When you got on a ship to go across the Atlantic, that was it. That's probably the only time you're ever going to do that. And that's essentially specifically because of the time horizon of the communication and the travel. And it's fun to take this ridiculous but really fun thought experiment to that level with the new monetary system, because essentially there's, you know, when you anchor the concept, when you anchor the protection or the security of the system in the laws of thermodynamics, you can start looking out that far and potentially we can end up with the same thing. You know, like this technology and the proof of work could very well be that genetic code that allows us to scale society to that new level. It's not as if, like, you know, people will say, oh, we won't even have money back then. It's like, well, no, money is the very reason that we can actually scale society. I think the people who think that way, or the assumption of that, oh, there will just be a point where we advance past it, is to like say, oh, there will be a point where, going back 20 million years is like, oh, well, we'll just invent something where genetics doesn't matter. It's like, well, no, genetics is still the very reason, like DNA is the very reason why multicellular organisms can exist, because there is an abstraction, because there is a way to communicate as a single body rather than as nothing but individual separate cells. So it's not that money will be uninvented by new technology. It's that new technology will be possible. Society on a new scale will be possible because we have a money, because we have that the DNA of value, which allows us to actually cooperate and organize at that scale. Now, there is one thing that I think Dhruv hits in this article that I don't think makes a whole lot of sense, or I don't think quite holds up, is that there will be a different hashing algorithm for Solcoin and Bitcoin and Muskcoin and these other things. Because, I mean, he talks about it, I think his law, the second law is kind of correct, is that you have these different levels of time horizons and space horizons that essentially will let only different levels of blockchains or of these economic systems function. And just like he says that, you know, a type 1 and a type 1.2 blockchain can't coexist, because they're just like a frequency, you know, there's a lot of, essentially an infinite number of frequencies between the A note and the B note, but they fall apart, they're dissonant, right? And just in that same way, these different horizons only allow a blockchain at a certain temporal scale to exist, and anything near it just collapses into that blockchain, into that system, because of the economics of it. But if you start stretching this out to month-long block times and year-long scales of communication and stretching all the way across the solar system and these sorts of things, suddenly there's this new peak, or there's this new wavelength that can actually be sustained because it's in concert with the smaller scale. It's like the same note at a different octave. The low C note and the highest C note. The highest C note on the piano will play, or will fluctuate or oscillate many, many more times than the lowest C note on the piano. But when the low C note is oscillating in one way, the high C note is in tandem with it. That's what makes it harmony. They converge even though they're on completely different timescales. And in that same way, the Type 1 and the Type 2 blockchains would converge. And in that same way, because the law of hash horizons, the whole hash bomb and stuff, is actually protected through a temporal difference, I don't see how it makes sense, or it would change things such that they wouldn't use the same hashing algorithm, right? I don't quite see how Soulcoin, like I feel like the only way that the Type 2 blockchain could actually be sustained, or I guess you could say bootstrapped, and the one way that it actually would be bootstrapped that wouldn't be at an economic disservice or in economic competition to the Type 1 blockchains and the Type 1 civilizations that make it up, is for them all to merge mine it. Like, there's no trade-off there. Like, you immediately have all of the hash power of Bitcoin and Musk coin together working on Soulcoin, or any of the different colonies, or the belters and all that crap. Maybe it won't quite work because Musk coin and Bitcoin technically, I think, need to have different algorithms. I don't know. See, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. I feel like there's something there, though. I feel like it only makes sense that there's a common hashing algorithm that gets to utilize the infrastructure of the lower Type 1 blockchains. But maybe that's, I'll let them figure that shit out 200 years down the road. But the really fun thought experiment, I think, in this is on the idea of Soulcoin and just kind of that science fiction idea of, oh, we're going to have these huge Dyson spheres and these massive civilizations and this freaking spaceship that's like the size of a moon and all this stuff. And that we really don't, like science fiction has never, or at least anything that I've read or watched or anything I've dug into, they never really talk about the economics of it. Is that, how do you start and fund a project that's going to take 30 lifetimes to complete, or take a whole society's worth of capital to actually make productive? Like, what are the economic trade-offs and the political theory that goes into something that massive? And the idea of it being like a Soulcoin contract that's time-locked or something. Just a really fun thought experiment. But anyway, I'm out. I'm out for the day. I just really love this piece. I'm glad we finished it. It was a really long one. But Dhruv always just has some really fascinating things to dig into. And I figured you guys would like it as much as I do. I at least am a pretty fierce nerd when it comes to this kind of stuff. But I got one little thing that I want to just throw a huge wrench into everything in this article. But before I do, a quick thank you to our two amazing sponsors. We got the Bitbox hardware wallet and Level.co for mobile banking services in Bitcoin and a free exchange. Check them both out at guyswan.com. And if you want to share a product or service that you have that you think this audience would love, let me know. I would love to talk. hit me up at sponsor@thecryptoeconomy.com. Now, here is what I want to just mess this whole thing up with. Can you imagine the disruption of all of this? So has anybody seen the Bob Lazar documentaries and like Joe Rogan interview and all this stuff? He talks about there's this element that can actually control gravity. Or I guess not really control. It's that I think the idea is that it produces like magnitudes more gravity than it does simply as matter. And therefore you can actually use it to bend space-time. This would allow you to essentially artificially create like the time dilation effect of going around or traveling near a black star or around a sun or something like that, where you experience time at a aggressively different rate than someone would on Earth or whatever, that they would see you being able to, they would see you experiencing that time. Essentially, you could have it so that a year existed within a few seconds by manipulating space-time around you. And then, of course, this opens up the idea of potential teleportation, of maybe quantum entanglement of distant communication. Literally everything of this whole thought experiment falls apart. Imagine we figure this out in a Type 2 civilization. We've got Musk coin, and we've got the Kuiper belt coin, and we've got Bitcoin, and we've got Soulcoin, and then suddenly we stumble upon either this element, or we figure out how to manipulate gravity, or just figure out the secret to teleportation, and we can teleport communications as well as physical objects. Suddenly we hyper-Bitcoinize all over again, and Bitcoin eats the value of Soulcoin, Muskcoin, the cure per belt coin, and everything, and we go back onto a Bitcoin standard. You know, that is the day. That is the day I am holding for, because Bitcoin truly is the one and only galactic money, and we're going to be filthy, stinking rich when we get there. All right, guys, that's it. I'm out. Thank you so much for listening to Bitcoin Audible. We've got an awesome piece by Robert Breedlove coming up, so stay tuned. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to share this show out with everybody who's getting into the Bitcoin space so they too can get the master's degree in Bitcoin knowledge, plus a little ridiculous science fiction sprinkled on top. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.